searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Hello and welcome in to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this Friday edition of the program. Good to have you along today. Glad you're there. I just glanced down at the Facebook live feed and noticed that, Vincent, why do you have a Clorox logo as your Facebook photo? I just have to know. Oh my, it is a rainy day in my neighborhood. I hope things are better where you are, but it looks like it's just going to be a gray, constant downpour here. That's okay. Tucked away inside the studio, not feeling the rain. Just looking at all these things we have to talk about today. Stories which face us, things to think about and to ponder and to talk about. Hopefully to keep us thinking throughout the day before we hit the end of this Friday and unplug. And I encourage you to do so for the weekend. Try to unplug, but wait until the weekend. Okay. I mean, wait until you're done. One of the reasons I say that is because if you really do want to stay informed, you do have to pay attention, especially on Fridays, because on Fridays, bizarre things happen. Yeah. The powers that be dump things to the news networks that they don't want anybody to see. So, well, I say they don't want anybody to see. They realize it's newsworthy, but nobody's paying attention, so it won't hurt them to release these things on a Friday because everybody's on the weekend already. Well, pay attention. You learn things. Maybe Creepy Uncle Joe was already heading into Friday last night when he said he had never seen Trump disavow racism or white supremacy. No, seriously. I'm not kidding. He actually did.
When has he ever said a negative thing about a white supremacist?
Well.
Have you heard him say anything? I haven't.
Roll tape.
I totally disavow the Ku Klux Klan. I totally disavow David Duke.
When you say the party is self-destructing, what do you see as the biggest problem with the Reform Party right now?
Well, you've got David Duke just joined, a bigot, a racist, a problem. I mean, this is not exactly the people you want in your party.
So are you prepared right now to make a clear and unequivocal statement renouncing the support of all white supremacists?
Of course I am. Of course I am.
How many times do I have to reject? I've rejected David Duke. I've rejected the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan.
About the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy.
In that mix, you also heard him condemning at one time Nazis and white supremacists. You probably caught that. He said the word Nazis and white supremacists. He condemned them. And I want you to know where that came from. That came from his speaking to the press about Charlottesville. That came from that same time he was talking to the press about Charlottesville. He condemned the Nazis and white supremacists. At that press briefing, he condemned both of them at the press briefing. But you would never, ever, ever know that today by watching or reading mainstream press. You wouldn't know it. All you know from them is that he said they were fine people on both sides. He wasn't talking about the white supremacists and the Nazis. He had already condemned them. He was talking about people who just disagreed. Not the radicals on both sides, just the people who disagreed about whether or not a statue should be taken down. Just people who had a difference, not the radicals who showed up for a fight. He condemned those people. And he said there was plenty of fault to go around on all sides. You remember that? People got mad at him. That's horrible. How could you possibly? Well, because there was plenty of fault to go around on both sides. But he did condemn. It's in that little montage. Podcast listener, back up. Listen to the montage again, and you'll hear it. It's kind of out towards the end when he mentions Nazis and white supremacists. That was from his Charlottesville time with the press. And yet they completely ignored his condemnation of Nazis and white supremacists and chose to focus on him saying that there were fine people on both sides. When it was very clear to any honest individual, he was not talking about the Nazis or the white supremacists. He was talking about the people who just disagreed about whether or not they should take down a statue. Just average folks who showed up because they had a difference of opinion with a decision. But the bottom line for creepy Uncle Joe is, yes, President Trump has disavowed racism and white supremacy many, 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 many times. But creepy Uncle Joe and the leftists in the press and in politics keep saying that's not true. You may remember a few years back when Mitt Romney was running against Barack Obama for the presidency. And Dirty Harry Reid stood up in front of God and everyone and declared that Mitt Romney had not paid his taxes. He never paid taxes. It was a bald-faced lie. A bald-faced lie, which was quickly shot down, quickly disproven, quickly corrected. But to this day, there are still people, your liberal friends, who believe Mitt Romney, some rich dude, never paid his taxes. They still believe that's true. Remember that old saying, a lie can spread around the world before the truth can get its pants on. And that's what we're faced with when we're dealing with the leftists in press and in politics. They know that people will believe their lies and that correcting that lie once it's made its way around the world is an uphill fight. And so what do? They lie. They lie and they lie and they lie and they lie again. The biggest lie that we're facing now is happening in secret behind closed doors in Washington, D.C., and we'll look at that here in a few minutes. But before we move on, there is some good news coming out of, hang on here, I've got it. I know I've got it here somewhere. There's some good news coming out of Texas. A judge has awarded joint medical decision-making to the father trying to stop his 7-year-old son's gender transition. We talked about this story the other day. A Texas dad trying to stop his 7-year-old's gender transition at the hands of his mother has been awarded joint medical decision-making rights by a judge. Jeffrey Younger hugged supporters outside the Dallas courtroom yesterday. Asked whether he was happy with the outcome, he appeared lost for words, grinning broadly and nodding his head for several seconds before saying only yes. This is a closely watched ruling, a ruling by family court Judge Kim Cooks. It comes after the jury's verdict on Monday that sole custody of twin boys James and Jude should be granted to their mother, Ann Jorgelis. Texas is one of the only states in the United States where the family court matters. Family court matters can be decided by a jury. They'd been asked to decide whether sole custody should be granted to a single parent, and if so, which one. Judge Cooks instead ruled that the existing joint managing conservatorship should continue. Now, you know the story. Dr. Jorgelis, the mom, contends that the boy, James, is transgender. But now we know, after a couple of days of things surfacing as they do, that she started dressing him as a little girl as early as age 3, painting his fingernails, putting him in dresses, calling him a little girl. And he told his dad, yeah, mom does this to me. So clearly, just from what we know, from the little bit we know, it's fairly clear that mom is demented, that mom has psychological issues, that mom, honestly, should not be allowed to care for this child. Because if she'll do this, she'll probably ignore a court order. She says she won't. She says she won't start giving this kid treatments and medically beginning the change. But can she be trusted if, in private, in quiet, behind closed doors, she has for 4 years, that we know of, been dressing her child as the opposite sex and telling him he is a girl? That's something we need to remember. So this is a story we can't just say, well, hooray, and turn our backs on. This is a story we need to pay attention to. Why? Because this is not the end. This is just the beginning of people waking up and realizing that this entire transgender issue is a farce. This entire transgender issue is being generated by delusional people with delusional ideas. The vast majority of it, 99.999%, these people are following a pop culture trend. And when they victimize children following their pop culture trend, they've crossed a very serious line. I told the story the other day about listening to a transgender woman, someone who used to be a man, has gone through all of the procedures, all the medication, all of the surgeries, and now lives as a woman, talking about going into the doctor's office that was working her through the process and where the prescriptions are coming from. And the person behind the counter, the receptionist, who is also transgender, saying that the vast majority, better than 80% of the people who come in, are coming in just because it's a pop culture thing. They're demanding to be transitioned because California, the land of fruit and nuts, the left coast, California has made it law that if you demand, your demand must be complied with. And so they go into a doctor's office, they demand to be transitioned, they cannot be questioned, and they get what they ask for. And the vast majority of them just have mental problems. So what we're watching happen in our society today is advocacy of mental illness and the requirement that we accept and condone mental illness and give it a place in our society, rather than facing the mental illness and dealing with it, correcting it and treating it. But this is life with the progressive movement. As I've said so many times, and I know I'm just beating the same drum, the progressives honestly believe they are intellectually and morally superior to everyone else, and that nobody else can truly understand how necessary it is to do the things they do. Well, when you apply that rationale, you could get away with practically anything. And now you understand the progressive movement. They tell you you can't understand because it takes a special kind of person to understand. And they are those special people. Remember, I've said this to you before too. Remember what Barack Obama said in a speech to an enthusiastic crowd. He said, "We are the people we have been waiting for." In other words, the progressive movement of today is the right group of people to put into place the changes that they think should be made in order to make the world the paradise they think it can be. It doesn't seem to matter to them that every time the very same things have been tried everywhere else in the world, they have failed miserably. Even in the Netherlands, where they say, oh, it's working there. No, the Netherlands has a market-based economy with extremely high taxes to pay for their social programs. So the kind of socialism they say will work doesn't even work where they say it works. When you're dealing with progressives, you're not dealing with rational, reasonable people who live in the real world. Because in order to be progressive, you have to deny reality. And when progressives are confronted with reality, they become very unhappy very quickly. And they start accusing reality of being racist and sexist and homophobic and transphobic and just generally phobic. Because they have to be wrong because the progressives can't be. Those evil, evil people, they won't let us believe our fantasy. What's wrong with them? Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It is the Friday edition of the program. Diving into the weekend from here. Oh, man. I need a weekend. I don't know about you. Had another session producing the Dawson Now podcast yesterday. It was a good session. It'll be very interesting to the people who live in Alabama, particularly, because it involves someone who is running for the Senate in the state of Alabama. And, the show drops, it's not next week, it's 2 weeks from now. At any rate, I recommend it, the Dawson Now podcast. It's a good show, good podcast. So go look for it. It, like this podcast, is available in the Apple Podcast app. It's also available through Google Podcast. It's available through Spotify and iHeartRadio as well, the iHeartRadio app. So go look for it. Go look for it today and follow it or sign up for it, however, whichever one of them you choose handles it, because they handle it differently. Some of them you subscribe to it, other ones you follow it. They send you notices when the new one drops, so that way you get a current edition. All right? Okay. It is a rainy day in my neighborhood, as I said earlier, and there's a lot of stuff that's happened overnight. And two of the biggest stories are the one we just talked about, the judge awarding joint medical decision-making to the father trying to stop his 7-year-old son's gender transition. And this one, the Department of Justice Administrative Review into Russia probe has now taken a serious turn. The U.S. Department of Justice's Administrative Review into the origins of the Russia investigation have taken a major turn into a full-fledged criminal investigation. It is no longer just, hey, let's go look at this. It's, okay, this there's been enough evidence turned over, enough rocks turned over, enough stuff revealed to convince them that this is now investigation into a crime. And that, for people who are looking for the truth, who want to see real justice, who want to see the law upheld, is good, good news. The review, led by U.S. Attorney John Durham, has shifted from being an administrative review into being a criminal investigation, according to the New York Times and actually several other sources, noting that the move gives Durham the power to subpoena for witness testimony and documents, to impanel a grand jury, and to file criminal charges. The Times immediately tried to frame the move as being seen by many that Trump is using the Justice Department to go after his perceived enemies. Quote, Mr. Barr's reliance on Mr. Durham, a widely respected and veteran prosecutor who has investigated CIA torture and broken up mafia rings, could help insulate the attorney general from accusations that he's doing the president's bidding and putting politics above justice. Now, that's the New York Times. You know we cannot trust the views and opinions expressed by the New York Times because it has proven itself to be a progressive outlet. It can't be trusted with reality. DOJ guidelines state that federal investigators must have a reasonable indication that a crime has been committed before they can open up an investigation, and that there must be an objective, factual basis for initiating the investigation. A mere hunch is insufficient. That puts the Democrat witch hunt into an interesting light, doesn't it? Quote, Mr. Durham has indicated he wants to interview former officials who ran the CIA in 2016, but has yet to question either Mr. Brennan or James R. Clapper, Jr., the former director of national intelligence. Some CIA officials have retained criminal lawyers in anticipation of being interviewed. How interesting. They've already retained criminal lawyers. Fox News reported Tuesday that Barr's investigation had expanded based on new evidence uncovered during a recent trip to Rome with Attorney General Bill Barr. The sources said Durham was very interested to question former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper and former CIA Director John Brennan, an anti-Trump critic who recently dismissed the idea. The two Obama administration officials were at the helm when the unverified and largely discredited Steele dossier, written by British ex-spy Christopher Steele and funded by the Hillary Clinton campaign and Democratic National Committee, was used to justify a secret surveillance warrant against former Trump advisor Carter Page. The Daily Beast reported at the start of the month that Barr and Durham were interested in what the Italian Secret Service knew about Joseph Mifsud, the erstwhile professor from Malta, who had allegedly promised then-candidate Donald Trump's campaign aide George Papadopoulos he could deliver Russian dirt on Hillary Clinton. If you're not familiar with that, this guy met George Papadopoulos someplace. Papadopoulos thought, well, this is really strange. This is something odd about this. The guy kept trying to push Clinton dirt, Russian dirt on Hillary Clinton on him. The Italian Justice Ministry's public records show that Mifsud had applied for police protection in Italy after disappearing from Link University where he worked, and in doing so had given a taped deposition to explain just why people might want to harm him. A source in the Italian Ministry of Justice, speaking on the condition of anonymity, told the Daily Beast that Barr and Durham were played that tape. The Daily Beast added that another source with the Italian government confirmed that Barr and Durham were shown other evidence the Italians had on Mifsud. Barr and Durham have also reached out to Australia and the United Kingdom as part of their investigation into the origins of the FBI's investigation into the Trump campaign. So this has transitioned from just let's have a look and sniff around and see what's up. It is now a criminal investigation. A criminal investigation, which, as has already been explained, doesn't happen unless a crime. They suspect a crime has been committed. They have seen convincing enough information that they believe a crime has been committed, and now they want to do a real investigation, call witnesses, subpoena people, and the like, look at evidence. So now it's not just an exploration. This is a full-on criminal investigation. As many of us have suspected for quite some time, it looks like the Clinton campaign and the Obama administration were involved in an illicit act, an illicit process to undermine the candidacy of Donald Trump, to keep him from being elected, and to assure that Hillary Clinton was elected. Remember, I don't want to sound like I'm blowing my own horn here, but I keep saying that the Clintons and the Democrat Party and their pets in the media, the progressive press, were all convinced that Donald Trump had zero chance of becoming the president. They were very, very cocky about it. They were arrogant. They were condescending. They were, there's no way. You remember when Ann Coulter appeared on the Bill Maher TV show, and he asked her, who in the field right now actually has the best chance of being elected president? Her answer was Donald Trump. And the place exploded in laughter. People on the panel looked confused and how could you possibly think that? And that's just crazy. And she was right. Everybody on the left, in the progressive movement, in the press and in politics, were convinced that Hillary was a lock for the presidency. And I have said so before, and I contend that it's true. They believed so because the Democrat Party, the Clinton campaign, and the Obama administration had been involved in a lot of behind-the-scenes shenanigans to make sure that happened. I'm convinced of it. Just because, well, because of my age and my life experience and watching how people act and the way they behave and what they think and the like, I'm convinced that's what was going on. Just like I was convinced that Hillary's problems during the campaign, people were concerned about her health, remember? She was stumbling. She couldn't climb in and out of a van. She had trouble navigating a set of stairs somewhere. She passed out, almost passed out at a funeral service, a memorial service, and had to be taken away. And a mere few hours later, she's bright and chipper and sunny. And I told my buddy, my partner on the Mark and Mac show, I told Dave Mack at the time, she's drunk. She's got a serious drinking problem. This is why you didn't see her after the election. And that's why she looked as rough as she did for a few days after that election. She had been drinking heavily. And now that's becoming fairly accepted in a lot of places. The same gut that told me that tells me there was a lot of shenanigans going on with all of the parties involved, the Obama administration, the Clinton campaign, and the Democrat Party. They were all involved. They had been putting out misinformation for months. They had been rigging things all the way through the primary. And they were absolutely sure that in the general election, all of their work in the background was going to pay off and she was going to be the president and would continue the fundamental transformation of the United States of America that had been started publicly by Barack Obama. And when it didn't happen, it sent them into a tailspin. And since then, they have been trying to crucify the president we elected on that day. More after the break. As the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, for this Monday through Friday hour of observation, insight, and in absurdity. Oh, man. It's a Friday edition of the podcast. By the way, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate the fact that you're there wherever you are, whenever you may be listening. And there are people all over the place. Texas, California. It's funny, I go look at stats and things every now and then. I try not to, but now and then I get curious and go look just to see what's going on. And kind of amazing where the podcast is going. And I appreciate that. Now, don't interpret that as me saying, we're huge, because we're not. But it just surprises me where, you know, just, wow, there's people here and people there. There's Alaska, there's Hawaii, there's California, there's all over the place. This little pokey podcast from just outside of Birmingham, Alabama. And little old me, and of course, the dog in the background, who's usually asleep. And you don't hear her ever on the podcast. You just don't. But from time to time, while I'm talking, I can hear her snoring. So I'm not even entertaining my dog. Well, the Senate, it looks like, is going to be voting on a resolution that calls the House impeachment proceedings illegitimate. 3 days ago, Donald Trump told Republicans to get tougher and fight impeachment. In response, Republicans in the Senate are set to introduce a resolution that calls the House impeachment inquiry illegitimate. The resolution already has 44 Republicans on board, including Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Coming from the Hill, Graham, during a press conference with reporters, lashed out at the House impeachment inquiry, calling it a secret proceeding and a rogue action that denies due process. The process in the House today, I think, is a danger to the future of the presidency. Lindsey Graham they're talking about. That's what he told reporters. He argued that under the current procedure, Trump was pretty much shut out. God help future presidents, he said. He's right about the secrecy. It's absolutely ludicrous to carry on an inquiry into removing an elected president out of sight of the public. Their excuse is that witnesses may be put in danger and that criticizing process is a distraction. Yeah, you've been hearing that a lot. Oh, well, you know, I mean, when you're guilty, all you can do is criticize the process. Really? Oh, and they're also saying the witnesses could be put in danger. Remember what I told you yesterday that Paul Krugman over at the New York Times was saying that that the witnesses could be in danger of being attacked by right-wingers and that he's losing his mind because right-wingers don't, you know, people on the right, conservatives don't attack people. Leftists attack people. It's the left, progressives. They're the ones who shut down anything that they oppose rather than allowing all voices to be heard. Leftists shut down what they oppose, not people on the right. They also claim that holding hearings behind closed doors prevents witnesses from coordinating their stories. Of course, it also prevents Republicans from defending Trump in public. And that is, I think, key. They say it's to keep witnesses from comparing notes and trying to keep everything on the same page when they're defending the president. But what it amounts to is it prevents the Republicans from defending Trump because they don't know what's being said. They can't fight against it. And it's interesting, isn't it, that on the left, they leak things to the press all the time. Salacious, dangerous, dramatic things. And you don't hear that coming from the right because the right seems to be operating with a different level of integrity. And if the right ever leaked anything, the left would go ballistic. When crafting a political narrative, it's best not to confuse people with the facts. The resolution, if passed, would throw Senate support behind asking the House to vote to open a formal impeachment inquiry and provide President Trump with fundamental constitutional protections before going further into the impeachment inquiry. The resolution calls on the House to hold a formal vote to start the impeachment inquiry, argues that the House should give Trump due process, including the ability to confront his accusers, and says that the House should give Republicans the ability to issue their own subpoenas. These items right here are the very reason that Nancy Pelosi has not called for a House vote. Because if she calls for a House vote, then we get this. The formal vote allows due process. It allows the ability to confront accusers. It gives Republicans the ability to issue their own subpoenas. It makes it a public procedure. As it stands, without the House vote, without it being a public procedure, the left can release any kind of information they want to, true or not, to paint the president in a negative light so that popular opinion is swayed against him. And if you watch, you see this is happening right now. Little tidbits are being leaked. Polls are being done. Polls are being done based sometimes on these little tidbits of information. What do you think about this being said about the president? Those polls are publicized. The news media jumps all over it and makes a big deal out of it and sways public opinion even further away. So this is all by design. All by design. They don't want to have the House vote because they want to keep everything as hidden as possible and only release what makes the president look as bad as possible. Earlier this week, Speaker Nancy Pelosi declined to schedule a vote by the full House, authorizing an impeachment inquiry. The obvious lack of bipartisanship is one reason. But Pelosi also wants Democrats to get their impeachment ducks all in a row, deciding whether they want a broad indictment of Trump or focus narrowly on the Ukraine matter. They're taking their own sweet time. As I said, there's a reason. Senator John Kennedy, Republican of Louisiana, who is also co-sponsoring the resolution, added that lawmakers can't just ignore centuries of precedent and the protections set up under our Constitution. Democrats must think the American people are really stupid. He's right. The Democrats do think you're stupid. I go back to what I keep saying. Progressives think they are intellectually superior to you. The little people need the progressive leadership because the little people are too stupid to govern themselves. And our nation was founded on the principle of self-government. You and I are the government. The people in Washington are appointed by us to represent our views and our opinions, not to ignore them. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has argued the rules don't require a vote. However, Republicans say it would give them more leeway to call their own witnesses and to put swing state Democrats on the record on launching the impeachment inquiry. And that's another thing they fear, losing seats. Because if they go on the record and they favor impeachment and it's not favorable with their people back home, guess what? They're out. Do House Democrats really believe they'll get the public behind an impeachment effort by presenting evidence gathered by this kangaroo court? Their own hysteria could be their downfall. Let's go back in time, shall we? Join Peabody and Sherman in the Wayback Machine for just a moment, and let's think about the Kavanaugh hearings. The Democrats thought that they could impeach a good man, a man of upstanding moral character, a guy with a great record, a guy who is pretty much blameless, by holding public hearings and berating him for things he did not do, with a witness who claims things were done to her which could not be corroborated by anyone, whose best friend at the time these things were supposed to have happened said, "Nope, don't remember that. Never had anything to do with a thing like that," even though she said that her best friend did know about this. So, and also, others were paraded out. Others made claims which turned out to be false. The Democrats thought they could use that and torpedo the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court. The American people watched. And progressives sat by the sidelines and screamed, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, you go get them." And rational, reasonable, intelligent, honest people watched those hearings and said, "What the heck are these people doing? This is disgusting. Look at the Democrats. Look at what they're doing. This is horrible. I don't blame that guy for being mad. I don't blame that guy for being beside himself. If somebody accused me of the things they're accusing this guy of, and I was innocent, I would be exactly the same sitting in that seat at that microphone in front of the cameras and all those people. I would be beside myself with anger. Yeah, I'd cry. My voice would crack. I'd be just beside myself." And the average American said, "Wow, the Democrats are nuts." But true to progressive form, they doubled down. They decided to do the same thing to the president. Well, they decided from the get-go. Let's go a little further back with the Wayback Machine. Let's go back to the election of a senator in the state of Alabama. When Doug Jones was elected, because a Democrat, Doug Jones, the pet of Chuck Schumer and the left, because a very dirty campaign was waged with accusations against a man who had served Alabama rather admirably as Chief Justice for the state on two different occasions, a guy named Roy Moore, who now, when you hear his name, if you type his name into your social media, say, "Saw George Roy Moore on TV today, interesting guy," your progressive friends will say, Don't even mention the name of that pedophile. He's been labeled with no evidence, no corroboration, no proof. They didn't have to. They just had to make the accusation. They just had to make him look dirty. They did, and they won. This is the way the progressive movement operates. They throw things out which are not true. The lie makes its way around the world before the truth can be revealed. Going back even further in the Wayback Machine, to when Harry Reid said what I've already mentioned today, that Mitt Romney never paid any taxes. A bald-faced lie that made its way around the world. These hearings are just another form of lies. It's all a lie intended to taint public opinion. But it's being done in secret so nobody can see how nasty it really is. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Holy cow. Holy cow. It is a Friday edition of the podcast. Diving into a weekend, looking forward to it. Hopefully you are as well. And that you have some great plans for your Friday and your Saturday and your Sunday. I don't know what I'm going to do. I think my wife is working tomorrow. And so that means I'll be unsupervised. Ooh, the potential. Ha ha ha. Well, there is some good news coming from Florida. No, it's not a Florida man story. Although those are just great. This is about what's happened in Broward County and the shooting that happened on Valentine's Day there at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School a couple of years ago. Substandard leadership during two mass shootings and one sheriff's career was enough to cost him his job. The Florida Senate voted 25-15 to uphold the executive suspension order of Governor Ron DeSantis, permanently removing Scott Israel from office. Governor DeSantis said, "I thank the Florida Senate for tending to this matter. I hope the outcome provides some measure of relief to the Parkland families that have been doggedly pursuing accountability." The general consensus: Israel neglected his responsibilities and endangered public safety. Worst of all, his leadership failure and incompetence are being blamed, at least in part, for the massacre at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School on February 14, 2018. The gunman, Nicholas Cruz, shot and killed 17, wounded 17 more. Israel's critics say that might have been avoided, except one, he failed to properly handle tips his department received about Cruz leading up to the shooting, and two, he failed to rush to confront the shooter. The video of disgraced school resource officer Scott Peterson is just standing outside the building didn't help refute his allegation. Neither did the obvious inaction of several other deputies. There was a lot of failure involved. Of that, there is no doubt. Last month, a special master investigator found that the Parkland tragedy was the fault of multiple individual failures and recommended that Israel be reinstated. He had been suspended pending the investigation. His subsequent challenge of that suspension failed. The attack lasted only 4 minutes. Even if the investigator's findings were accurate, would better leadership or a faster response time have made a difference in the outcome? We just don't know. At first glance, it may seem as if Israel is an unlucky scapegoat intended to soothe the angry, grief-stricken families of the victims. Maybe cynical, but it seems DeSantis also may have removed Israel from office, at least in part, to appease voters. After all, he'll be eligible for re-election in 2022. Still, as the sheriff, Israel should be held accountable for his own negligent leadership and for the action or inaction of his officers. Four Broward County Sheriff's Department officers were fired over failure to confront the shooter. But Israel was the one, after all, who rewrote the verbiage of the department's policy, so officers may go inside during an active shooting instead of shall, as the original version stated. Even so, Israel suspended and eventually fired the officers, Peterson for adhering to policy and procedures and remaining outside. Which one of these fine lawmen most deserves the nickname the Coward of Broward? The internet awarded that to Peterson. In all fairness, at least Peterson has shown remorse for his decision. Botched responses to two mass shootings notwithstanding, Israel proved himself unworthy of the badge in other ways. He had shown incompetence before the Parkland attack, during the 2017 shooting at Terminal 2 of Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport. And before that, he hired campaign supporters and chose not to report some fairly luxurious gifts. Pretty shady at best. The horrific tragedy in Parkland wrought irrevocable changes in so many lives. But have the incident and its aftermath changed Israel? He tweeted, "I want to extend once again my sympathies to the families of the Parkland victims. I'm filled with sorrow for your loss. My family and I continue to keep you in our prayers. I truly thank my family for their..." And he goes on. Now, although in January Israel made his condolences to the victims' families, he had this to say after the ruling. Quote, "Law enforcement in Florida fundamentally changed tonight. The office of sheriff, once accountable to the people and the law, is now subject to the petulant whims, political paybacks, and personal piques of partisan tyrants in Tallahassee." Wow. Political paybacks, personal piques, partisan tyrants. Interesting. You know, one of the things that honest, responsible adults teach their children is that there are consequences for your actions and your decisions. I think Scott Israel is experiencing consequences right now. He made some decisions, he's failed in some ways, and as a result, the consequences are he no longer has that job and won't get it back. There are many who've been calling for his ouster for quite some time. Rightfully so. That's my opinion. Rightfully so. Because he worked hand in hand with the school board, with the Promise Program, which turned a blind eye to the criminal actions of minority students in order to improve the stats for their school system. Rather than coming down hard on crime and causing students to suffer consequences for their decisions and their actions, and improving the lives of everyone as a result, they chose the progressive approach, which was to ignore their misbehavior. And then, when people looked at the statistics, they could say, "See, we have vast improvement." When in truth, there was no improvement. Things were actually getting worse. They just weren't reporting the problems anymore. This is also typical progressive procedure. When you can't solve a problem, you ignore it. And politically, you condemn everyone who points that out. So today, Scott Israel is no longer the sheriff and won't be coming back because the people of Broward County finally had enough. Also, someone who won't be coming back is Tulsi Gabbard. She will not be seeking re-election to her Senate seat for the state of Hawaii. She's decided to focus on her White House run. Now, when I saw this story, my first thought was, what are you, crazy? She's ranked so low. She's so far down. She has no choice. She has no chance. What's going on here? This is one of those things that we're going to have to keep an eye open, keep an ear open, and wait for the other shoe to drop. Because there has to be another reason she's not seeking re-election. There has to be. Because as it stands, she is far, far outranked and outsupported and outspent by much bigger names. Something fishy is going on here. And finally, a lot of us, myself included, have been really disappointed in recent months with the Drudge Report. I don't know about you, but I've gone many times over to the Drudge Report looking for an unfiltered source for news stories, just news links to stories which reflect across the board what's going on. And that's been the hallmark of the Drudge Report for quite some time. It was started back in the day during, well, I think it was the Monica Lewinsky thing with Clinton, and he started a site which he felt was necessary. Let's look at the reality of things. Let's report what the main sources aren't reporting. Let's link to those sources. So that's what he did. Links to all manner of news. So you got the conservative side of things as well as the leftist progressive side of things. And recently, that seems to have flipped. There are those who say it's because of advertising relationships, that he has an advertising relationship with Google of some kind, which is shifting the way he reports. Well, good news. There is another place you can go for balanced news links, sources to stories. It's called trends, trends.gab.com. trends.gab.com. It actually looks a lot like the Drudge Report, and it gives you stories from sources all over the world. It's a good place to go. Give it a shot today and see what you think. trends.gab.com. And that's it for me. Looking forward to a good weekend. Hopefully you are as well. God bless you. Have a great one. We'll see you back here for the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?